Tribute, An Ordered Life by Philip Shelley. Talking about my dad is hard for several reasons. The main one being, Dad didn't talk about himself. It was something to do with his generation, his class. Something to do with the war, I think. They wanted to put it behind them, to move on. So many terrible things had happened. For his generation, it was like an unspoken but collective agreement. Look to the future. Make the most of what you have. Avoid emotion. They honoured their past by not mentioning it. My generation, I think we struggle to understand that. Our reaction, our rebellion, is to tell our children we love them several times a day, almost to the point of it losing its meaning. But with Dad, it wasn't just about class and generation. It was his family. I met my grandfather, my dad's dad, but he died when I was 5 or 6. I have no memory of him. My grandmother was a short, elegant woman, self-contained. I remember her smile. Often it was a smile of judgment, of derision. My mother never liked her. As a child, I found this odd. As an adult, I understood it. Dad had one sister, 2 years younger than him, Audrey. I don't think I ever remember Dad and Audrey having a conversation with each other that wasn't practical. Directions, arrangements, money. I have no memory of them talking about anything remotely trivial or meaningful. I certainly don't remember them laughing together, or even smiling at each other, except for a pinched, pursed smile of tension and good manners. So that was my dad's family. Strange, remote, ungiving in many ways. This is where my dad learnt communication. He asked me for lunch once at his club. Over an hour, sat at a table, just me and my father. That's the only time, after the age of about 8, when I can remember this happening. He, it was probably initiated by my mum, was worried about me. He wanted to give me money. In this way, he was very kind. My response was disdain. I was insulted that he thought I needed his money. I turned him down, gracelessly, during the starter. And for the next 2 courses, there wasn't much to be said. I can't remember what we talked about, but I can remember the feeling of awkwardness, of failing to fill the next 45 minutes, and how that 45 minutes hardened my disdain for him. He worked hard, always made sure I had enough, got a good education. He just didn't talk to me. I think his marriage to my mother was very happy. They were a real partnership and depended upon each other practically and emotionally. But the surface of their relationship was characterized by bickering, pedantry and the most minor disagreements. Travel arrangements were always difficult. Map reading on long car journeys tense and contentious. At the time, this was unspoken, but after his death, my mother often told me about how unhappy his working life had been. For many years, he was employed by my mother's brother. I think he always felt there was something a bit shaming about having to depend on his wife's family for employment. He worked abroad for a while in the US, and again, my mother told me he wanted to stay, to live abroad permanently. He responded to the classlessness, his lack of ties, escaping from the class burden of the family pecking order and his own perceived views of his lowly position in the wider family hierarchy. He suffered for his snobbery. There are happy memories, mostly to do with sport, which I love, and he didn't. Him playing cricket with me in the garden with a small plastic yellow bat. Making a connection over hard-fought games of table tennis. Non-verbal events like this we could cope with. But then, on the holiday tennis court, my dominant memory is of tension and anger, of arcane breaches of middle-class tennis protocol, getting told off for kicking the balls back to him instead of picking them up. One time, he got so angry with me that he stopped, turned around, and from the other side of the net, fixed me with a death stare, and very slowly, but very deliberately, started walking around the net towards me. Got within a few feet of me before thinking better of it and turning back to his side of the net, but his slow, meaningful walk towards me, Wilson metal racket in his hand, 2 tight 70s tennis shorts and toweling headband are an abiding memory. Part fearful, part hilarious. His childhood and adolescence I know little about, although there were hints and whispers of a more glamorous, exciting past. For instance, that he may have been born out of wedlock. A bastard. My mother's speculation, something my father's parents had tried to hide, that he'd spent some of the war working along the codebreakers at Bletchley, and then later, in the war, in India and then Indonesia. Occasionally, me and my mother encouraged him to tell us about his past, his childhood, but he always swatted such suggestions away as somehow being both trivial and inappropriate. He seemed to have no desire to share anything about his past with his family. Once there was a tentative suggestion, which came from my father, but like many messages, via my mother, that I should consider joining his Masonic Lodge. My response was predictably contemptuous, my attitude towards Masonic Lodges having been shaped by Monty Python. I have romantic notions that somewhere my father lived a secret life of sex, debauchery and escape, but I think his only real escape was into music. He'd sit for hours by himself, smoking a cigar, with classical music thumping out of the top-of-the-range speakers which he treasured above all else. After his death, I discovered his highly sophisticated cataloguing system. Records, CDs, and a list of what he'd listened to and when, and all the programmes of all the concerts that he and my mother had attended, carefully stored in chronological order in box files. An ordered life. And how do I feel now? I feel a sense of incompletion, lack of resolution. I wish that I'd yelled at him, that we'd fought, hit each other, raged. And I wish that we'd told each other how much we loved each other.